Thank you for being a part of the call. I apologize for being a few minutes late. It's been a busy couple of days around here. WrestleMania season, not that I'm always spot on time anyway, but WrestleMania season tends to put a little bit more on the table, and this year is no different, maybe even more so. And coming back last night from being in L.A. for the incredible HBO co-produced with WWE documentary on Andre the Giant. If anybody that you know hasn't had an opportunity to see it, if you weren't there last night, I recommend it. It's spectacular. Anyway, here we are again at another TakeOver WrestleMania season, TakeOver New Orleans. I really feel like this one is something special. It's probably one of the most stacked, loaded cards from top to bottom of established and new and just kind of feeling epic across the board, long-term stories that have built. And I just feel like this one is firing on all cylinders. And hopefully everybody will agree after they see it. So with that said, you know, I'm sure you're all aware of the card. I don't think I need to go through every single match on the card. I'm sure everybody's aware, and I'm sure there are a lot of questions about it. So let's just dig into it and open it up to questions.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, it may be necessary to lift the handset before making your selection. As a reminder, please allow yourself one question and one follow-up per turn. We'll take our first question from Mike Johnson with PW Insider.
Hey, Paul. How are you, sir?
Congratulations on winning the first question lottery today.
Oh, geez. All right. Well, I don't know who you won money from, but thank you. You're welcome. I wanted to ask you about the North American Championship. I don't know. Okay.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you about the North American Championship. Obviously, you guys are going to crown the first champion to take over next week. What's the mindset behind adding a secondary championship? Is this so there's a second belt when you guys split the tours and NXT's in one place and at the same time they're in Florida, you guys can have titles on each tour? Or is this perhaps a precursor to longer NXT TV so there's more goals for the different talents to chase? Like, what's the seed here of the idea, and is this a precursor for other changes to the brand?
Yes.
Very insightful.
You answered a lot of that for me. Look, there's a lot of reasons for it. The timing is right. The long term, to me, the North American Championship is a long term expansion play, much like the UK Championship is. It is part of, to me, a long term. And when I say long-term, I mean long-term strategy play with the brand. And it's something that I see growing. I think it helps with a lot of the things that you mentioned. As, you know, NXT is doing multiple tours and, you know, doing over 200 live events a year, doing multiple tours in Florida and more out-of-state touring. It's doing international touring as the UK continues to evolve, which I know you've seen the announcement of Download and some other tours that we're going to be doing over there in Europe, but there will also be some follow-up announcements coming soon based around the UK and that championship. And it's all to me about long-term expansion, and sometimes I think it's difficult. People see it happen. They think about the moment now. Sometimes those expansion plans take a little bit longer than we initially anticipate, but all of these things are happening for a reason, and most of them are longer term reasons, but they also fit the narrative of today. So it's kind of a double benefit.
All right. I guess my follow-up is, are we looking at a secondary title for the women in the in NXT as well?
I think time will tell and see where we're at. You know, as far as the amount and the, you know, I always want to make sure that the quality is there for the brand and that the amount of talent that we have within the pipeline is matching what we're putting out there for the creative. And I just would, before I would do that, I would want to make sure that we had enough depth to it to make sure that it could cover all the bases it needed to cover. But absolutely, you know, I as much as sometimes the strategic plans take longer than you would like, I also am very careful to not put ones out that we aren't pretty confident that we can execute in a timely manner. So you don't like them to take longer than they need to. So I wouldn't want to put something out there that wasn't the right fit immediately for the brand. That being said, I think all those options are on the table as far as I don't, you know, I just want to be clear. I don't look at the women's division any differently than I look at the men's division realistically. It's all about the amount of talent we have and then how can the talent fill the pipelines that exist, whether that be tag team championships, whether that be a secondary singles championship. It just it depends on the amount and the what we have in the pipeline.
All right. Appreciate the time, and I won't take up any more of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net.
Hey, Paul. It's become a
tradition. Hey, Jason.
Hey, good to talk to you again. It's become a tradition that some NXT talent is called up to the main roster after WrestleMania. I'm not naive enough to expect you to name any names, but can you talk about that process and how that's decided in terms of, you know, who's coming up and who's in on those discussions and really when are those decisions made?
So, you know, it's an ongoing process. I think throughout the year, strategically with the team that is responsible with me for NXT and then sort of the team that is responsible for main roster movement. And I think if you kind of looked at it sort of like, you know, making the shift from college to the pros in football, there's teams on both sides that are kind of evaluating that. And we're putting out the prospects from NXT side up to where we think they can fit. It's all about fit in the roster, where something is needed, where an opportunity is needed and where they can fill that role. And then when do they want to do it? And then that final answer comes down to Vince as you know, he's a busy guy. He's not always aware of every single person on the massive roster of talent, both, you know, on the developmental side, especially that we have. So, there's a process that they go through where they're showing him people and showing him how they can fill those roles and what he thinks and, you know, what his vision is of how it wants to go. So it's a constant process. As we get closer to WrestleMania, they're looking at the how, the when, and how it all pieces together. So it's a process. At the main roster level, that final answer is Vince and the team that is responsible for both Raw and SmackDown writing.
My other question is, how do you feel about companies piggybacking off of WrestleMania? Nobody really runs opposite of Mania itself, but there are definitely some rival promotions that run opposite takeover events. And so I'd like to know your thoughts on that.
Look, I think that it's, as long as they are quality events, then that's great. Look, if fans of sports entertainment in general, when they come into the New Orleans area for WrestleMania, I think them having the ability to have choice. I think them having the ability to enjoy the sports entertainment that they want to see and enjoy is the best thing. We can't supply every single thing for every single person as much as we try, and I think that it's good. My only concern on it is when it's not quality or it's not you know, the risk or anything is not good. You know, if it's a bad experience for our fans, the only time it really bothers me is if, you know, somebody comes in and they see WrestleMania week as WrestleMania and WWE and they go to a different event and they're disappointed at whatever aspect of that in quality or the experience or any of it. If it's a negative, then, you know, obviously I would like that to be a positive. If there was ways for us to work with those people to make the experience more positive, great. That's really my biggest concern. Other than that, it is what it is. And it's funny to me though that sometimes we do our business in the way we do our business, and sometimes those people will then come back and say, like, well, then they moved an event here and they put it directly against ours to try to combat us. But look, we don't do anything in response to anybody. We go into WrestleMania, it's our event week. It is us going in there in the biggest way possible and celebrating WrestleMania and our fans from around the globe and their passion for what we do. And we're trying to give them the best event and experience possible on our side. Everything else to us is, it's there, but we do what is right for our business. It's what people enjoy, and I'm happy if they enjoy it. I'm happy that they're there and they can enjoy it.
Well, thanks for the time, and try to get a little sleep next week if you can.
It might have to wait till after Mania. I don't know.
We'll go next to Jim Varsalone with the Miami Herald.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Going back to the North America title, specifically the belt itself, what made you decide to do that belt? And will Ted DiBiase, Pat Patterson, or Sakaguchi be present to present the belt to the winner?
Well, you know, it's one of the funny things to me is that people have asked about the lineage of it, and I kind of feel like when the lineage stops for that long of a period of time, it's a weird, there's really not a lineage there. I think it's not hard to look at it and say, well, there's a UK and a European championship, there's a North American championship. It's not hard to see a global direction there. And I think that's the equation to it. We've talked about it, and I'm hesitant. Look, if any of those people, I'm hopeful that Pat Patterson will be there. I'm hopeful that Ted DiBiase, if he's in town that weekend, and again, there's a lot of people in town, so I'm not positive. He might be for us. I'm not positive. But, you know, that they would come by, and I would love to have them be a part of that, because as anybody, I think, hopefully knows, I'm a huge history buff of our industry in general. And anytime I can make those correlations, I love to. I'm hesitant in this one because I feel like there is not necessarily this like ultra strong lineage to it, because it's been so long and I don't know how direct of a correlation there would be. So I kind of see it a little bit of starting over with something new here, but hopefully those folks that you mentioned would come by. Love to see them all.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim.
We'll go next to Dave Meltzer with Wrestling Observer.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Hey, Dave. I just want to say congratulations on the Andre doc. I think you guys are having a little bit of problem hearing me. I think there's maybe a delay in the feed today, but. I just wanted to say congratulations on the Andre doc, as I thought you were phenomenal in it. I thought you added some great insight, and I really thought it came out well. I was very happy with the level of respect that both the industry in general and Andre were presented in, and I felt like it was very well done, so congratulations.
I was actually going to ask you
about it. Thank you for being a part of it.
I was actually going to ask you about that since I haven't seen it yet, but I'm glad to hear that you had such high praise for it, because when I worked with the guys who did it, I thought that they were, just by the nature of the questions they were asking, I thought they were really looking for something special. And the few clips I saw, I really liked. So, yeah. I was actually going
to
ask
I'd love to hear your feedback on it.
Yeah, okay.
I'd love to hear your feedback on it once you see it. But, yeah, it's something special. And anybody that's a fan of what we do, and Andre, you know, even my wife, who was friends with him her whole, you know, childhood and everything like that, there's a lot of stuff in there that she didn't know. And it's a really fascinating look at in every single way possible, a larger-than-life man.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I didn't know that they had told me about as well. It was really, yeah, they really worked hard trying to uncover, you know, the whole story of him. So, yeah, I was going to ask you a couple things about Takeover and kind of theoretical, and then the North American title thing kind of also triggered something else. So your shows are usually, you know, 2:15 to 2:30-ish, which to me is a great time frame. You know, it feels like it's, when it's over, it's like I don't feel like I've been there too long watching it. I feel like it's either the right time or sometimes maybe, oh, I'd love for it to go 20 minutes more, which I think is a positive that you want more, rather than you go in there and go, ah, God, when's this thing going to end type of thing. But when you're adding roster depth like you have so many new guys coming in that are, there's so many talented guys, and you're obviously going to be bringing more in as the year goes on. Is it going to be possible to keep these shows at like that under 2 hour, 30 minute mark without leaving so many talented guys on the sidelines or having to do so many multiple person matches, in which case then the matches don't feel like they really mean anything? And the other one is, when you're doing this, how much do you kind of go back and forth? Because I know you're kind of like the would be a liaison between the main roster and the NXT roster. And the one thing like this week that I noted was on Tuesday I'm watching SmackDown, and they had the Daniel Bryan thing with a match where if Owens and Zayn win, they get back. If they lose, they're gone forever type of thing. And then on Wednesday, I'm watching the NXT, and it's the same thing with Ciampa and Johnny Gargano. And I don't know if that's good or bad or indifferent, but I'm just wondering, it's like, what's kind of the theory? Do you think that's a good thing? Or is it just, well, these are the storylines and we're just going to do them on consecutive nights?
Yeah, you know, it's a hard mix, Dave, on all of that. Like, clearly, to answer the questions individually, so like when we talk about the time of the event, that's the balance, right? Give people enough and so much that they go like, man, that was awesome, but they don't feel like you overstayed your welcome, or that you were like, oh, you know, it's a great movie, but they like, they didn't need that last scene where they had the false finish and then went into the last scene in the movie. It just felt like it I don't want to look at my watch, you know. So we're conscious of that. As far as it's a positive for me that you look at it and you go like, wow, is the stacked deck and it's so deep in the roster and all of that, that, you know, becomes a risk of these shows having to be too long. That's a good thing. But there's multiple answers to that. First of all, some of that, I would make assumptions over the next few months will thin out a little bit as hopefully, as that gets finalized and talent maybe make moves and make changes and leave the NXT brand to move up or to move to Raw or SmackDown or however that's seen. From there, you know, I'm not a believer that every single person has to be on every single card. And I know for the most part we do that, but I don't, you know, if you go and you look at boxing or you look at UFC or something, there's a different main event and a different feel, and something resonates with you on this one, but you know, then that person is not on that next fight card a month later, still an epic fight card. I believe that you can ship those storylines and they don't have to match exactly, that every single talent has to be on every single takeover or larger live event. If we got to the point where the talent roster depth, if we could be so fortunate that it was so thick that we felt like, Jesus, now I'm leaving these people off all the time. And I would prefer to add another event and make it a second meaningful event in a period of time than make the single event longer and, you know, kind of less meaningful in its entirety. I would rather do that. That would be my preference. Whether or not, you know, that's something we can do would remain to be seen. But it's a good problem to have, I believe. And then I'm sorry, what was the second half of that question?
Just about the deal where Gargano and Ciampa and then the Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon match. You know, kind of like the same storyline on Tuesday and Wednesday, or same match stipulation essentially.
Yeah, sorry. The coffee just hasn't fully kicked in yet, but yeah, you know, it's part of the difficulty of multiple brands, and when, especially with NXT, when we're ahead of the time frame, right? So, look, I don't necessarily know what the Raw and the SmackDown storylines are going to end up being in the next month. But sometimes I'm already shot into a month ahead of time of my creative or with NXT. So it's tough to, I try to look at things and say like, okay, I'm going to put a ladder match on NXT TakeOver. Like, before I make that decision, before we creatively commit to that, I am going through as much as possible as saying, look, are you guys in any way thinking of having a ladder match at Mania? Are you in any way thinking of having this type of feel and this type of environment? I don't want to take away from that. I'm never there to say, well, look, it's good for TakeOver and we're on the night before, so you guys deal with it. It's Mania is the big daddy here. And, you know, we're bringing it in, and there's always another way to skin the cat and get to something and make it meaningful creatively. So we try to work it out, but then there's other times where you put together the creative and it's, you know, 4 weeks later, you go like, well, that ended up being kind of a similar story, but what are you going to do about it? Right. So, it is what it is.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dave.
We'll go next to Raj Giri with Wrestling Inc.
Hi, Paul.
Hey,
how
Raj.
Are you? Hey, I had a question about your your increased responsibilities with 205 Live, and has it been tough managing that with NXT and your duties with NXT, and also with all of the changes with 205 Live? Has there been any talk of maybe changing when it's taped, like or still doing it after SmackDown?
Yeah, look, anytime you add anything to the plate, it's an added responsibility. And while Vince has been working on it since the very beginning, he has yet to be able to actually add hours to the day or days to the week, although he's working on it. And I think he approaches life as if he has already accomplished that task. And he likes to say that his job is to keep us busy, and he's extremely good at it. So, yeah, it's a creative addition, but it's one that I enjoy and I welcome. And the thing is, there's a great team that helps to structure that event, and I'm kind of the final process in that. And what's nice about that is being able to give them some direction in a long term format, and then letting them create that, and then just kind of guiding them along that creation, as opposed to with 205, I'm not crossing every T, dotting every I, writing, you know, every moment. It's, to me, there's a much more of an oversight. And I'm, you know, as all these responsibilities become more and more, everybody has to do this. As you take on more and more, and as things grow, you have to be able to take things off your plate, step back, and having the oversight of stuff and not necessarily being so in the weeds on all of it is helpful. I'm happy with the direction that 205 is going in. I think it seems to be working very well. You know, viewership is up. The fans seem to be enjoying it through social, and the feedback we're getting seem to be enjoying it. The reaction is up, and it's, you know, trending now where it wasn't before. And that's great. It's exciting to see. And at the same time, you know, NXT is doing well, and the viewership is way up, and the excitement for it is way up. So I'm happy with all of it. And, you know, as long as fans are enjoying it, it's a good thing.
Okay, thanks.
We'll go next to Sean Ross Sapp with Fightful.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, Sean.
You've spoken before about how a guy like Elias, you knew necessarily wouldn't really fit into what NXT provides, but you knew he would thrive on the main roster. And we've seen people like Braun Strowman and Mandy Rose go straight to the main roster without any real NXT run. Is there anybody else that you have seen that for and maybe surprised you that they connected on the NXT roster so well? Or anybody in the PC that you see that could make that jump without NXT?
Yeah, man, I think there's a few talent. It's an interesting mix. When you're looking at it from the outside, it's tough to separate. You see the PC, you see NXT, you feel like it's the same kind of thing. And, you know, I hear people talk about that all the time, about talent that come in from someplace else with experience, time experience of having done it for a long time. And they go like, yeah, they came in, they just got plugged in, and then they just moved up. And quite honestly, they were ready to move up before they weren't. And that's the truth. And people don't necessarily understand. You see NXT every week or what the product is. That is a momentary glimpse into what that talent is doing at that time. All the other components that go into being successful at the main roster level are being taught on a day-to-day basis at the PC, and that learning curve is huge for everybody across the board. And I don't care who they are, and anybody that thinks differently is wrong. Quite frankly, it's a huge learning curve, and I think anybody that goes through the system believes that and says that. There are always talent, and the evaluation becomes not confusing the skill level and what they're doing with the fit of the brand, you know, and what the brand does. The brand of NXT is a certain brand. 205 Live, it's a certain brand. It has a different feel and vibe. Raw has a different feel and vibe a little bit from SmackDown. Where do those talents fit in the best? To me, is a large part of that equation. So there are always talent in the PC, whether they're talent that are coming from ground zero, having stepped into the ring for the first time at the PC, to talent the other way, the that have been in it for a long time. You know, the personality, the level of entertainment. Elias is, and I, you know, when I bring up the Elias thing, I'm always concerned after I say it that people take it the wrong way, that it had nothing to do with his skill level or his, because he's talented on all levels. It's just the what he does and the way he portrays the character, the general entertainment of what he is and does, and the way he puts it out there, it's just more suitable to that main roster feel and vibe. And it was just keeping him in the system long enough for him to get the experience and the exposure, to learn the cameras, to learn all the other things that we do, and to become as polished as possible, so that he could make the jump when he was ready. And when he was ready, we put him there. If I would have put him there a year before, he wouldn't have made it. You know, he wouldn't have been ready. And then it's hard to explain to people the level of spotlight that hits you when you hit Raw and SmackDown, and how quickly that is. The success rate is determined. And a lot of that, you know, yes, you can say creatively the way things are done or whatever is done creatively. A lot of that comes also down to the talent. The level of talent and what they do can make bad creative awesome. It really can. A lot of it comes down to them and just what they're doing. And you know, and then, of course, the other thing I say to talent a lot is that the business is a marathon, not a sprint. Everybody looks at, you know, what they're doing in the moment sometimes and says, you know, geez, they're just terribly misusing this, or it's not being done the right way. It's a marathon. And if you look back at the careers of any superstar in this business at a high level, especially the most successful ones, the beginning is a lot longer. That beginning process where it's not working or it's you're just seeing glimpses of what's to come is a lot longer than you really think it is. In hindsight, it doesn't seem that way. You just see the success. But when you look back, it's a lot longer than you think. And all those other stutter steps and hesitations and the delays and the things that are the process of getting to that upper level, they all go away when they make it. And you kind of forget about them. You put them out of your mind. So it's a process that everybody goes through. It really is.
To kind of follow up on that, you spoke about the learning curve, and we've seen what guys like Matt Riddle have done on the independent circuit, and he said that he did very well in the tryout. You said that you've heard that Jessamyn Duke, former UFC fighter, is a natural, and we've seen what Shayna Baszler and Rezar, the authors of Pain, have done. What do you think of this influx of MMA talent that has made the transition into pro wrestling and how they've done? I know that that plays into what you're doing at WrestleMania as well.
Yeah, sure. I'm about to get thrown around by two of the best shooters in the world. You know, it's a funny thing that I think doors open and then it seems like an influx, you know. You get a couple of high-level NFL guys, and all of a sudden we get barraged with calls from NFL, former NFL guys or people, you know, athletes that have tried to make it in the NFL. A lot more of them start calling us to see the opportunity. You put MMA people, Brock Lesnar, you take that level of performer from a combat sport that makes it in our business, they start to see it differently. A lot of them are very well suited because of the mannerisms and the sort of the athletic ability is very similar to what we do. Then it comes down to personality and all the other things that make a well-rounded WWE superstar, because I say this a lot, it's a huge puzzle, right? Becoming great is a huge puzzle. The more pieces of the puzzle you have, the better. You don't have to have all of them. Not everybody's a great in-ring performer. Not everybody's great on the microphone. Not everybody's great with a character, whatever. But the more pieces you have, the more successful you can be. I think you see that influx because you see some success from people at those levels, and you see them starting to boil up and become more and more, and the fit is an easy fit in the physical sense, and then the ones that succeed are the ones that can pick up all the other pieces.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Greg Oliver with Slam Wrestling.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, Greg.
You mentioned how NXT storylines really build through time. Is that something that the creative team really works on in NXT? And related to that, how was the creative team at NXT different than Raw and SmackDown, besides, you know, writing the weeks ahead, as you already mentioned?
I think that it's not necessarily, I don't want to say like that, different team in that they're structured differently or anything like that. There's a little group of folks that write NXT, this team that writes Raw, team that writes SmackDown. When I say write, I'm you know, it's more than just the creative. Well, then they do this, then they do that. It's formatting the shows and everything else, timing them, all of the stuff that goes into creating a television show, which is, or I shouldn't even say television, creating a show, because distribution is so varied now. But you know, there's a lot of components that go into it. It's knowing the brand and the differences in the brand. We have a little bit more leeway and ease of what we do with NXT because, it's an hour-long show. It's a one-hour weekly show that, you know, every 8 weeks or whatever has a large-scale event that we build towards and pay off. Can that change over time? Yes. But that's what it is right now. And when you talk about then going from a one-hour show to writing a two-hour show, it changes the equation. When you go from a two-hour show to a three-hour show, it changes exponentially. And then when you talk about a monthly pay-per-view event or different things, all of that changes. So the way things are written, the way things change on a dime, it's just different. Sometimes we can get through an NXT. If an injury occurs on NXT, we might be 4 weeks built into something already shot, and then an injury takes place and it's trying to figure out, like, all right, how can we make this work into the story? How do we play this into the story? Because I'm going to come back in a couple of weeks and shoot 4 more weeks of television, and how can I fit that in? Will this person, the injury rate is this, the return date is that, if this works out, I can go here. When it's live weekly, that equation changes dramatically. It's much harder to plan long term when those things happen on the dime and you have to be able to make that shift. So comparing the two is you know, apples and oranges. Everybody in all brands, we're always trying to look ahead and say, what is the long term direction you want to go in? What's the destination you're trying to get to? But it's much more difficult when turn by turn things can change.
And related to that, does the NXT talent get the same sort of encouragement to give their input in the creative?
Absolutely. Yeah, they you know, one of the things that we're trying to do in NXT is help them learn and build on every level. So there's, you know, creative input is asked, creative thoughts are asked, characters are asked. It's sometimes, you know, you see talent in the NXT brand, especially at the very lower sort of kind of the folks that you see come in and out of NXT, because we're just kind of giving them little samples of what they do when they get on television to see how they react to it and stuff. You see them trying different things with the characters that this works, this doesn't work. We're letting them spread their wings a little bit and try things, develop on their own, try things with promos, try things with this, try things with that, get it to them ahead of time so they can experiment with it to try to see where it goes. If you follow the live events in Florida, sometimes we're trying out characters or personalities or promos or little bits and pieces of things. We're trying them out, seeing how they go. And it's all about letting them spread their wings and grow so that when they get to the main roster, yes, they can participate, but they also, in that participation, have a much better sense of this will work, this won't work. I tried this before, this failed miserably. I shouldn't do this, you know. And because the one thing, look, I found in my career is that success, I mean, the failure is that biggest teacher. You know, you learn things with success, but sometimes you succeed and you're not sure why it worked or something. And sometimes that failure is a much more direct learning curve. And as you fail, you learn what not to do the next time and you learn how to apply it to get to the success level. So I never see it. I don't even like the word failure to me. It's like, it's not failure. It's learning. It's just learning. And that's really NXT, that brand, the performance center, all of that, it's all about learning process. And in this industry, you'll never stop learning because this business changes on a day-to-day basis. The feel of it, what people are reacting to and what they want to see. Some of it will always be true and stay the same. Others, it changes on a minute-by-minute business basis. But so that learning curve will always be there. But you're at NXT, at that level, we're building that foundation of the learning. Some talent have been doing this a long time and they have a much better basis of some of the learning and some of that foundation, but it's building it all out to be the most complete and balanced performer they can be.
Well, thanks, Paul.
And we have time for one more question.
Oh, certainly. We'll go next to Ryan Bowman with OneWrestling.com.
Hey, thank you for your time today. You mentioned earlier about NXT being. You mentioned earlier about NXT being your pipeline of talent. In the past year, which performers have you been happy with, as far as their development, or happiest with in terms of their development, and also who's been the most pleasant surprise?
Well, that's a tough question because there's so many talented individuals down there, and I assume you're asking me it from the who I see that change in at the NXT level.
Yeah, I guess over the last 12 months, obviously you're always refreshing the roster there, but who have you seen that's really stepped up, and I guess more someone that came in and they were even more than you expected over the last calendar year?
Yeah, you know, I see changes on everybody, and even talent that, you know, you look at Adam Cole, a guy that came in with a wealth of experience from places and sort of a brand built and a following and all that. And whether everybody sees it within the show, I don't know. But, like, for me, dealing with him on a day-to-day basis, and I know I get the same feedback from Matt Bloom and Shawn Michaels and everybody else, dealing with him, the level of understanding, the level of pro, the level of the right thoughts coming out of him, the level of the way he approaches things, where when you're putting stuff together, it's less direction and him having the right idea right from the get-go, that level of improvement is huge. He's changed so much in the period of time that he's been with us. But across the board, I see that improvement in everybody, whether that be like somebody like a Lars Sullivan, who is a homegrown that just kind of went from zero to where he's at right now. And like, I feel like every time I watch him go to the ring, I see him improve. Velveteen Dream. I mean, it's hard to say there's anybody in the system that's improved faster and more than him. But on the women's side, you know, even Ember Moon, who had experience in other places, but coming in and sort of, I think, struggling to make that adaptation at first with a confidence level and all that thing, but just changing that for herself over the last period of the year and a half. And then the improvements even on a Shayna Baszler, who's come in and had a lot of, the technical side of the MMA side, but character building and her confidence level and the ability to speak and promo work and just everything, becoming so much more well-rounded, all of the talent. And I'm thinking through the roster, and I'm like, all these names that I could throw out there that have just improved dramatically. It's sometimes more obvious to me because I go in there, I don't watch them every single day. I see them every 3 weeks. I'm aware of the things they're doing. I'm seeing the feedback, but then I'm seeing it happen when I get there. My conversations with them as we're walking through creative, the changes in their mentality and how they approach it. It's just, it's the stuff to me that makes me say how amazingly well the system that we have works. The tools are there. Anybody that fails to improve there, it's not on us so much because the tools are sitting there. But you can have all the tools. What you do with them is up to you. A lot of the talent that are succeeding are taking advantage of those tools every day. They're in there every single day. They're doing more. They're asking for, Shawn Michaels' input. They're asking for all this stuff, and they're coming in and doing more and more and more, and you see the improvements happening. And to me, that's the exciting part about this, and they're becoming more well-rounded. So hard for me to put my finger on anybody that has stood out more than anybody else. Even guys like Pete Dunne or from overseas that were not as hands-on every single day. The change in him from when I first met him and we started doing stuff and then got to the UK tournament to where he is today as a performer, putting things together, his mentality, all that stuff, the way he sees stuff, it's night and day. Night and day.
Too much talent is a good problem to have. Thank you so much for your response. And
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
I said having too much talent is a problem to have. So if you have a good time in the world,
and we're having a hard time hearing.
Yeah.
I agree. If you're on a speakerphone, Mr. Bowman, you might try taking yourself off speakerphone.
I just wanted to thank you for your response and say it's a good problem to have too much talent.
It's a great problem to have. I'm excited for the future. I'm excited about, it's funny too sometimes that I think when we talk about the talent in NXT and then you look at some of the talent that are now getting ready to boil up, it takes time to build things from zero and to learn this business from zero. But when you look at some of the talent we had with either no experience or minimal experience coming in and handling things at a level that, it's just amazing to see. I see Braun Strowman on the main roster all the time, and I think about meeting him for the first time a few years ago as just this big, booming personality strongman that had never stepped through the ropes before in anything. And I look where he is today and the success level that he's had and what he's picked up and his journey along that. It's to me, that's a shining example of the system in its best form.